That's lovely. And that song completely speaks to my relationship with this son. It's after this winter, I so have been enjoying that. A couple times this week, I left my office just to walk around the building. And, you know, it's still cool enough to feel it and love it and enjoy it. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and what a joy it is to be standing right here today, right now. I know, that's exactly how I'm feeling. And there's a buzz in here. It was really difficult for us to settle in and really get things moving. It's just such a joy to hear all the exchange of conversation and to witness all the love and the magnificence of this beautiful Sunday morning. Morning in the sun in the West Valley of Phoenix. So I'm talking today about something it sort of surprised me when I looked at, like, really, you chose that for a talk title? The title of my message is An Inquiry into Truth. I know, right? It's like, wow, what was I thinking? But in all the things I carry around, I found something that reminded me of where the title came from. And it actually comes out of the small book written 101 years ago by the founder of this teaching, this philosophy, Dr. Ernest Holmes. And that was the second book he ever wrote, called Creative Mind and Success. And right in the front of that book, and are you still doing that on Mondays? Are you still reading that book on Mondays? No, you're done? So the Monday morning book study group has been reading it, but it's like the very beginning, the opening of that book, there's this chapter that's called The Inquiry into Truth. Now, apparently, about 10 or 11 weeks ago, as I was preparing to teach the Advanced Science of Mind students, I had just read that chapter again, and I was so excited about it, which happens a lot if you're me, that I copied the chapter. I get in my little copy machine, I copied the whole chapter, and I created an assignment out of it for the Advanced Science of Mind students to do. And I said, you have to read this chapter in class and skim it and look for the high points, because you are going to create your own understanding of what is important to you in this belief, in this teaching, in your own spiritual grounding. And so we did that, and it was quite fun, but then I forgot about it. And now I get ready to do this message, and I'm thinking, and I'm really even looking at that chapter again, going, I just do not remember what excited me about all of that. So I did a lot of research rather than try and tell you what's in that chapter, I brought a quote from Ernest Holmes, and we're going to talk about what that means to have an inquiry into truth. So here's the quote. There can be no reason given as to why the truth is true. Well, that's rather stunning. There can be no reason given as to why the truth is true. We do not create laws and principles, but we discover them. Then we can make use of them. We are always expanding our capacity to know and to experience truth or God or life, whatever you desire to call it. And so it was evident to me when I found this particular quote that, well, that's what we're talking about. If we're looking into an inquiry into truth, we're talking about that way we're just looking to have a better understanding of these big concepts. And to remember, and this will be the key of what I'm speaking of this morning, to remember that concept is continually evolving and expanding all on its own. So you ready? Yeah. All right. First thing I want to say is, as we're looking at this idea of an inquiry into truth, is that we are not asking why. I think we spend far too much time wondering why, or asking God, why? Why did this happen? What did I do to bring this into my life? And we miss the whole point. And I didn't plan to tell you this morning, but as I was driving over here this morning and I was praying in my car like I always do, I had this real wonderful warmth and joy come over me as I recalled that scripture I love so much, where the disciples came to Jesus and asked, why is the blind man blind? What did he do? To create this blindness? Or was it his parents? Did his parents do something wrong? And you know what Jesus said to him? You're asking the wrong question. See, the wrong question is never why. The proper question, Jesus was saying, ask why, or not why, but how? How can we heal his, I'm going to heal his blindness, or he had already healed his blindness, I don't recall. But how did that happen? Don't get stuck on looking at the why, and I think that it's really easy to see that most new students come to a teaching such as this, and we want to know why, but you know why we want to know why? Because we think if we know why, it'll never happen again. But life is just one big, bold experience. And the why will only distract us from the truth. So an inquiry into truth cannot be asking God why. You can ask God what, right? You can ask God how. And in fact, I probably can't teach you why, but I can point you to those universal laws and principles that he speaks of in this quote so that you can discover them and learn to use them, apply them in your own life. And then everything changes. It's this exquisite experience. So there can be no reason, you know, to know is to know, and sometimes knowing is not knowing. And I know it all is very paradoxical, but so is spiritual truth as we attempt to embody it and apply it in our own lives. And yet still, no matter what, I just noticed that inquiring minds desire to know. You know, we desire to question truth, and so therefore I think this is a really good topic. So the first piece of research I felt obligated to do, which I had a feeling would send me down the rabbit hole only deeper, was I looked at how Ernest Holmes defines truth. All the great masters have made an attempt at defining truth, and so I looked in the glossary of the Science of Mind book, and here's some of the words. It's quite a lengthy explanation, but here's some of the words he uses to help us understand the meaning of truth. He says, truth is birthless, it is deathless, it is changeless, it is self-existent, and it is causeless. Now, is that clear? You know, it's like I hear those words and I go, what the hell? It's like, how can even someone as brilliant and well-studied as myself, even me, you know, if I can't read those definitions and understand what it's meaning, how can anybody? And that's the point. We can't. We can't. That's why I, even though I've looked up that definition so many times, was not expecting it to tell me, oh, truth is birthless and changeless and self-existent and causeless. And so I read those words again, and I just get lost in my own pondering. It doesn't lead me to a good understanding of what truth is. However, if I put the word inquiry in front of it, and look at it as a couple of words together that we're talking about this morning. Now, I have a little more to go on. I can decipher something that may leave me with some meaning when it's all said and done. Inquiry is to examine, to review, to analyze, to investigate. I like the word consider, to consider. And I would say in spirituality, we would say to consider again and again. So we're just looking at, to remember, or to have that effort, that intention to move to that place where we can use the principle in order to broaden our concept or our understanding of God, as Holmes stated in that opening quote. So now I have a broader view, a bigger overview of how to look at this idea of an inquiry into truth. What that tells me, I mean, even the words birthless and deathless and changeless, that tells me that truth can have no opposites. So when we're talking about spiritual truth, it's not like a true or false exam where you have a 50% chance of getting it right or getting it wrong, right? It's when we're talking about truth as that as an interchangeable word with God or spirit or life, the infinite, the creator, when you're looking at truth in that bigger way, there can be no opposite. And so in that way, if I know I'm standing in truth, I will never be separated from my good. But what happens? Sometimes we feel like we're a little disconnected from our good, maybe even from truth. Well, I think what happens is that truth doesn't see opposites, but hey, we do. Right? We live in form. We're not infinite. We are infinite at the level of the soul or in the, as I look at myself as a spiritual being, but this body will not live forever. And so we know that there's some seeming, it feels like there's some limitation in that. In reality, all is given to us. And so there can be, in truth, there can be no limitation. So we don't mean to separate ourselves from the bigger picture in our daily living, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes that happens because we have found a piece of truth, and it's very important to us. Oh, here is a piece of truth, and we stretch it and make it fit conveniently to our beliefs. And so now we're another step removed from truth. So it reminds me of a story I don't believe I've told for a while, but most of you have heard this before. It's that story where the devil and his best friend are walking down the street. They're on the planet here. And they're walking down the street, and they look across the way, and they see a man. And the man has noticed something on the ground. And he's sort of kicking at it. He's moving it around with his foot. Pretty soon he bends down, and he picks it up and he examines it really carefully, and then he looks around and he puts it in his pocket and he walks on his way. And so the friend says to the devil, "What has he found?" And the devil says, "Oh, he's found a piece of truth." And then the man, the friend of the devil, says, "Well, that can't be good for you. You know, you find a piece here, you find a piece there, you put it all together, then you're going to be out of work." And the devil says, "Ah, but I will allow him to make of it what he shall." Right? He will find a piece of truth and he will make it the truth. And that's what we often do. We find a piece, but we aren't experiencing the all of it. And so if we stay in inquiry, in that state of questioning, in that state of desiring to understand more, in desiring to have a larger concept of what God is, then we will find that our greatest moments of connection with the divine, I mean, that was a beautiful prayer, Jane. There was some real connection in there. Those moments happen not when we're asking questions, but when we are allowing our experiences to teach us. Okay? We can learn from that. So we do not teach in this philosophy, we do not teach of God on one side and the devil on the other, and they're both whispering in your ear trying to tempt you. We teach that everybody has equal opportunity to study principle, to learn how to use spiritual tools to reveal a greater idea of truth in our own lives. Krishnamurti, and by the way, that was a story from Krishnamurti that I didn't realize till I looked it up again. But Krishnamurti said, "Truth cannot be brought down. we ascend to it. So in many ways, we talk about our spiritual path as like climbing the mountain, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, and we're it's this idea of ascending, or we're transcending our limitations. So all of that is figurative, but remember, it is not something that comes to us. We open ourselves to experience it because it is already here. It's already given. Lots of people are trying to make sense out of life right now in ways that are unfolding outside of the walls of this sanctuary. You might say there are some things going on in the world, and what I notice is that lots and lots of people are grabbing their piece of truth, and they're standing on it, and they're very vocal and loud about the truth that they have discovered. In fact, they get kind of religious about it sometimes, don't they? And I will say this, that I think it is a good thing for us to have that inquiring mind so that we don't get too comfortable thinking that we have found the whole truth. But as a spiritual leader, what I know is I've been trying to make sense of the damn world too. Right? And like, how do I stand here and stand in my spiritual truth and relay a message that will be useful to people? And you're all coming from different walks of life and different ideas and your own pieces of truth, that because we're all trying to make sense of our own lives, right? We're just all trying to make sense of our own life. That would be one way. I'm asking us to go a little deeper today, Miss Dorothy. It is all good because it's all the potential is already fully given. But I'm asking us to reason on it in such a way that we get to practice these spiritual principles so that we begin to see the transformation in our own lives, in the way we are able to deal with the stuff that's happening in our families or in the world, whatever's going on. And so as a minister, I have found a new interest in the last year and a half or so. I have this new interest in studying historically other times in the past when great change has visited the planet. And I'm almost rather obsessed with it. The kinds of books I've been ordering on Amazon are not the kinds of books I ordered a year ago or more. And what I'm learning is that there's some great information we can see as we look at things that have happened before. Sometimes it's so that we don't make those mistakes again, the mistakes that happen as people were trying to make sense of their own world at other times. And what I noticed is that it seems very clear that whenever historically hierarchies have crumbled, people have scrambled to try and make sense of that newness that was now emerging because there was no pattern to follow anymore. The old is crumbling away. Now, how do we make sense out of this new? There's no instruction book, you know? And there's a word that I keep stumbling on in my reading, and that is that we are living in chaotic times. I've used that word in here before. I love that word, chaotic. That there is great chaos, and that there are ways that great chaos create this idea of new order. The old things don't fit the way they used to fit, so there appears to be this breaking apart, and so we're living in chaotic times means that almost like life is reordering itself, whether or not we're gonna, you know, how we choose to play. So confusion and chaos can force us into new ways of thinking, new ways of seeing, new ways of being, but not if we're afraid all the time. Now, it's not the first time we've had stuff on the planet happen where it must have been very scary to move through things. I last week shared a story of, I always like to plug the talk the week before. It's good. I think it's good for business somehow. I don't know. The business side of church is like, last week I spoke about the Buddha. If you'd like to hear the whole story, you'll have to listen to it on the website, which you can hear for free, or you can buy a copy of it in the bookstore after this service is complete. And what this story, the way that fits, you can see how the writing of the Sunday morning message builds from one thing to the next. And what I see is that there was this young Siddhartha, and if you look at the life of Buddha before he was the Buddha, before he awakened. And his parents tried to shelter him from everything out in the world, and they were wealthy, and one day he got a peek, just a peek over the wall. And it threw him in this tremendous state of inquiry. It upset his world completely because the way he thought life was, it was not that way. You know, we hate being duped more than anything. So now he's trying to make sense of his life and he's questioning everything. He's pushed into this corner where he has to question everything he's ever been told. Imagine, everything you've ever been told now is a lie. Everything the reality of his life has shifted. It's no longer the same. He has to re-examine every thought he's ever had to try and figure out how to come to some sense of reconciliation with the way things really are. And what happened was that he went out and he tried all different types of life, different religions, different spiritual approaches, and in his deep state of inquiry, he did not find peace until he sat still. And then it was in the sitting still that he found that place to know. Be still and know. But here's what's interesting to me. I didn't think of this last week, but during about that same time period, if you look at when they pinpoint the time period that Buddha would have lived, Plato was probably sitting with his student Socrates, and they were studying truth also. And after that, Plato would have studied with Aristotle. You know how you can remember those? I made this up. Spa. Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, spa. And it's a good thing to do on your day off, not think about philosophy, though. No. And so about that same time, you know, these great thinkers were questioning the way people thought. They're questioning, they're having these deep discussions, they're challenging the established authority of the day and the beliefs of that time. And so they're looking at truth. What is truth? What is truth? What is love? And they're having these in-depth conversations. And at about that same period in the history of time, we have the Chinese sages writing. We have things now that tell us that about that same time period, they were having the same questions about their own philosophies that were quite different than any of the Greek philosophies. And at that same time period, the Hebrew prophets were looking at the religion of their day and the teachings, and they were questioning. Changes were happening because change happens in the realm of form, and we live in the realm of form, so there is always change. So these great thinkers were wondering, like, why do we have this ancestor worship? Right? It's a very Chinese philosophy. Or why do we do animal sacrifice? And they were beginning to see that some of the traditions no longer served them, and the very daring and brave ones were stepping away and or standing up and saying, wait, we need to think about this. Why do we keep doing the same thing again and again? Are we not in that same place today? Yeah. I think we are in that same place today where we have this opportunity to look at some of the arguments that are going on. And we get to decide where we're going to stand. But guess what? We are having the conversations that are breaking us loose, where we are daring to look at some of the stuff and asking those same questions: is this still serving us? And then, of course, Jesus comes along and he brings up the same questions. And now everybody thinks, because it was prophesied that he would come and that he would shake things up, now everybody thinks that it's the end of the world, because Jesus is talking about these end times. And what we realize is, if you look, there was always an apocalypse predicted. There was always Armageddon. They had witnessed things that looked like that in their own living. But Jesus was not speaking of the end of the world. He was bringing us this gorgeous opportunity to understand what it means to live in chaotic times. So what looks like chaos is just the changing of the way things are arranged. Things are being put in a new order so that we can move ahead and take with us that which will work, and leave behind the old ideas that aren't working anymore. And that's where we disagree. That's where we have conflict, is we don't, I mean, we sort of agree that there's a lot that's not working, but we don't know how to move ahead because it's not clear. You know, because it's emerging. It hasn't revealed itself. So the world has been through change before now. Now, how can that make us feel any better? She said, in her spirit of inquiry, in the privacy of her own office, she asks herself. And I would say it can be that which makes you feel better if it tosses you back into that place of not knowing, where you are required to stand in your spiritual truth. Whatever gets you back grounded to that greater reality that Holmes was speaking about, that way of remembering that there are spiritual principles that do not change and that do not have opposites. And so we are here today, and we are sitting in the safety, sort of the luxury of this sanctuary, and we are inquiring about into the truth. We are looking for little gems to power us up. And indeed, I agree, you should not leave here today without a little gem that powers you up, that inspires you, that reminds you to remain grounded. But recall, in that opening quote, the words of Ernest Holmes: we can't know why truth is true, but we can expand our capacity to include, and I repeat this because we probably are ready now to actually hear it, to expand our capacity to include an experience of God. Ooh. That's a whole different thing. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. If you can say amen to that, you're thinking bigger. And when we do that, we change our entire life. There is no way you cannot change your life when you stand in that place. And I know I'm not the only one that thinks this way, because last Thursday, I thought Reverend Cheryl was complete with her group. She's like clockwork. She stops. She never lets you stay over, but this day she went a little over. And I walked out of my office because I had something to ask her. And I hear her say, with so much power and force and truth, she said, may I quote you, Reverend Cheryl?
Yes, ma'am.
Your God is too puny. She's telling the whole group, your God is too puny. And I said to somebody, oh, I got to write that down. That's so good. As if you could forget that. And I thought, that's exactly it. I'm always looking for another way of saying it. I'm always looking to tell you that really all we need is a greater concept of God. And then I thought of this during the week. Reverend Cheryl, you're going to love this. I was thinking about this, that 5 years ago, I was the senior minister right here on this pulpit in this sanctuary. 5 years ago, my idea of what God is was more punier than it is now. Why? Because it is always expanding forever and ever and ever. It is always expanding, and you know what that means? 5 years from now, no matter where we are sitting or standing, 5 years from now, we will be able to look back and laugh at how little we thought our God was, because it's just going to keep growing. Because we can't even begin to imagine. So how do you make a bigger God? How do you make a bigger God? It's all in your perception. It's by opening to a greater concept. It's by making yourself, you know, Holmes always says, by becoming a bigger container. You know, we study this stuff. We practice this stuff. We look at what we believe. We look for our gems, and we know that a gem should never be a piece of truth that causes us to stop that nature of inquiry, of questioning, that we always want to learn more. There's always something more to add into our consciousness. We are actually stretching the shape of our consciousness, and as we do that, we are changing the consciousness of this planet. We are a part of something much bigger. We don't create the laws. We use them. We learn about them so that we can expand. There is a power in the universe that honors our faith in it. Let me say that again. There is a power in the universe that honors our faith in it. Gives me this image of whatever that idea of God is, that, you know, that as we do that namaste, that it is divinely given back to us as we recognize it, and as we see it, it is seen in greater and greater ways, in a dynamic that we don't really have words for. Problems don't come from God. Problems are not God-ordained. Limitation is not from God. Evil and suffering and uncertainty, these are not things of God, because in God there is no opposite. In truth, there is no opposite. It is only our inability to perceive that truth at any given moment that gets in our way. But the good news is that we only have to shift our position ever so slightly to remember, or to awaken, as the Buddha did, to have a moment, a holy encounter of knowing that right where we are, God is. So I want to tell you this, that very often, you know, we're big at saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. We do that all the time here. I love it. And sometimes you will hear me say, I love you more. And when I say I love you more, I'm not talking really about quantity. I'm not even talking about quality, because we can't outlove each other, because the reality of love is that it's endless. But I always think of more as M-O-R, mutual oneness recognized. I love you. Yes, I love you more, because I am standing in this truth that there is only one of us, and I recognize your connection to the divine, and as I recognize your connection, I stand connected myself. Mutual oneness recognized. So I'd like to close with this quote from Ernest Holmes. And by the way, I have a feeling, Clyde, that Clyde's Wednesday night group is right about this place in the Science of Mind textbook, because this comes from page 32. Much of what I've said today comes right from page 31 and 32 in the Science of Mind textbook. Here are the beautiful words to close with. It has been written that the truth shall make you free, provided we know the truth and we note that the evolution of human consciousness brings with it the acquisition of new power and higher possibilities. We are evolving. The world is evolving. Do not be disheartened if it appears things are breaking apart, because we are living in chaotic times. This is not a bad thing. This could be an exciting thing. As it looks as though things are breaking apart, we can stand in our truth and know that there is no apart. There is no separation, that we are one, that every time we remember that, we strengthen that idea of one God, one mind, one life, ever giving. It is the grace of God. So let us yet again stop worrying whether other people are doing the right or the wrong thing. Just keep evolving your own consciousness. And so I think on that note, this would be a beautiful place for us to turn within and use the holy words of prayer to anchor some ideas, some gems of truth, and to allow us to just be still for a while and know. And so as the practitioners and the ministers are circling the room, I feel the consciousness of this community shifting as a whole. One mind, one truth. I feel the love of God right where I am. And I know it is that gift, that givingness, that grace of God. It is that which allows us to know we are created in the image and likeness of Spirit itself. And therefore, there can be no opposites. I feel that sense of connection, knowing yet again that in that recognition of oneness, we are more. For we move out of any mental constraints that limit our thinking, that limit our possibilities, and that pure potentiality of good that desires to demonstrate on this planet through ourselves. I know that there is only one truth, and indeed it is birthless, it is deathless, it is changeless, because right in this very moment we are eternal. This is not something we earn from a life well lived. It is a gift that is already given. And so as we rest in this place, in these holy words of prayer, we just allow ourselves to feel that love within us. For it is the activity of life. It is that which quickens our spirit and allows us to know that life heals, that life reveals itself perfect and whole and complete in every way. And so wherever there is any appearance of discord in our lives or in the lives of our loved ones, we simply know that something greater is there too, and we can say, I love you more, because we know that right where we are, God is. Right where our loved ones are, God is. Right at the heart of any appearance of discord, God is. And therefore, there is something that is already in perfect order. And any of the shadows that make it look different, any of the movement of life that is just a step in the way we ascend to the fullness of truth, to a higher vision, a higher recognition, a greater way of accepting it and embodying it and embracing it, we then can live it. And so I know there is a healing going on. In this very room right now, there is healing happening. There are relationships that are being blessed and restored to their fullness. There is love being revealed in such a profound way that nothing stands in the way of that revealing of perfection, that gorgeous way that the sun touches our bodies on a cool day, and we can feel that life. And so I know, in the words of Dorothy, that all is well, all is good, life is beautiful. And together we rejoice in that. And I give thanks for this. I'm so grateful for a renewed understanding of this beautiful outpicturing of life. I bless the way we stand in choice. And I release the words of this prayer into that divine law, knowing that it is already done. And together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.